We're up to the 28th Perek, page 178. Perek of Zion was pretty short. We actually finished it last week in just 1 week, which is pretty good.
It only had 12 verses.
Yeah, so that kind of helped. Yeah. Oh, well. I felt good for a few seconds, at least. Basically, at Perek of Zion spoke about how David, realizing that the king was after him and it was getting extremely stressful, he decided to actually move into the Philistine camp and try to create some type of a treaty with a king by the name of Achish. And basically, David moved to a different part of that area, but he ended up, as you can actually see in the very top line on page 178, that he attacked some of our enemies of old, from yesteryear, such as Amalek. And basically, one of the strange statements that Achish said to David, and David back, and we're actually going to see it repeated here in this parak, is that Achish actually believes, because of all the difficulties that Shaul has placed upon him, that David now wishes to side with the Plishtim army, and that when it comes to a time eventually that they wish to fight against the Bnei Israel, David will be on the front lines, ready to slaughter many, many Jewish soldiers. And that's actually what we're going to see right now, believe it or not. We're not going to actually see the war in this parak, or what ends up happening, but this parak will be certainly a very fascinating one, much to discuss. Pasuk Aleph on page 178. Vayhi b'yamim ha'heim, it was in those days. Vayikbutzu plishtim es machnehem asava, that the Philistines, they gathered together their camps, asava, as the Masudah Sion translates on the bottom of that of the page. Inyan kibbutz chayil, that they gathered together their army, together to lehilachem Yisrael, to wage war against the Jewish people, which of course is not a good thing. But what's even worse is the next part of this pasuk. Vayomer Achish el David. So Achish said to David, David who was already living there for a little bit of time, there's discussion exactly how long it was, that he was even counting the minutes and the seconds because he was outside of Israel and he was longing to go back. And so Achish turned to David, as he told him before when he walked in, said, you know, I know you're going to be ready to fight at a moment's notice when that time comes. And he says, here it goes, Yadoa teida, I know, ki iti teitze b'machne ata v'anoshech. I know that you and your men, everyone with you, you're all going to come out with us to fight against the Jewish people. If we look on over here on the English on page 179, there's two parts that I like to see, which is both on the right column. David's unintended success so thoroughly had David convinced Achish of both his loyalty to the Plishtim and as well toward to the countrymen there, that Achish offered David a high position, which we'll see in a second, the next pasuk, in the planned invasion of Israel. And then the next part, which I underline, says as follows, that David was in a quandary, he was unsure what to do. He would not want to fight against the Jewish people, but on the other hand, it would have been suicidal to openly defy Achish. Because after all, if he would say, I'm not fighting against the Jewish people, you're crazy, I'm a Jew, I'm David. Guess what, I'm going to be the king one day. He would be killed by Achish without much hesitation. And therefore, because of this, he had to answer in a very subtle manner so that he doesn't really buy into either way, so he can still sound like he's showing loyalty to Achish, but at the same time not have to kill any of the Jewish people in the process. And that's what we're going to see in Pasuk Bet. Vayomer David el Achish, that David said back to him, Lochein ata teida is asher yasa avdecha, you certainly know that which is within your the mindset of that which your servant, myself, what I will do for you. You know what I'll do for you. Ve'yomer Achish el David, and Achish said, oh great, l'chein shomer l'roshi asimcha kol yamin. Therefore, I'm going to place you as my bodyguard kol hayamin, for all days, permanently, for all time. So, Achish interpreted the words of David, of l'chein ata teida es asher yasa avdecha, to mean, of course, you know what I'll do for you. Don't you remember? I'm going to be loyal. But David really was saying, you know, come on, you must know what I'm really going to do. You know, even though Shaul is chasing after me, you must know where my loyalty lies, and that's with the Jewish people. So therefore, David chose his words very carefully so that he did not, on one hand, attack Achish, saying, I'm not going to protect you, I'm not going to stay on your side, because he would immediately be killed, as well as all his men with him. On the other hand, he didn't want to show that he was completely loyal to him, because that certainly is not something which David would ever do. He would never turn his back on the Jewish people. Okay. Now, this is where the psukim start getting a little bit fascinating, starting with the next two words in Pasuk Gimel. Ushmuel meis, and Shmuel died. Now, all the Mefarshim, as we're going to see in a moment, ask, what do you mean, Ushmuel meis, and Shmuel died? Shmuel died not just now. Shmuel died all the way before the whole episode of Naval. As we remember, Naval, who was married to Abigail, that Naval was shearing his wool off his sheep at the time when he should have been mourning over the death of the passing of Shmuel. And he didn't. And for this, among other reasons, Naval was punished. He ends up, David, marrying his wife 3 months later. It was a long time that transpired. Plus, he was already in the Philistine encampment for a significant amount of months as well. That being the case, what does it mean, Ushmuel meis? He didn't just die. That's old news. It happened a long time ago. So that's something which you're going to have to deal with in this pasuk. Let's continue in the pasuk. Shmuel died. V'yispedu lo kol Yisrael. Not only does it say that he died, which we already knew, but it says that there was a hesped. He was eulogized by kol Yisrael, except for Naval, but basically everyone. V'yikberuhu b'rama u'v'iro. And his burial place is in Rama, in his place where he lived, in his city. V'sha'ol heisir ha'ovos. That's Hayidonim Miha'aretz. And at this time, Shaul did the unthinkable. Shaul was engaged in the sorcery, the witchcraft, which is completely against the Torah. The Torah specifically says one is not allowed to be involved in this form of witchcraft, namely that of Ovos or Yidonim. A person is not allowed to worship and have this type of witchcraft, which we're going to discuss exactly what that is and what he did it for. So let's go completely out of order. If we jump to the English on page 180, on the bottom of the Hebrew on page 180, it talks about what is Ovos and what is, or Ov and Yidonim or Yidon. What are these two types of witchcraft? So Ovos, this is actually brought down in the Rashi. It says here in Sanhedrin, it's also brought down in the Psukim in the Torah, that Ovos is a way that a person can bring the spirit of the deceased by taking a bone under of the deceased, placing it under one's armpit, from which its voice is heard. And Yidoni, which is also a way in which a person is able to hear things from the grave, from beyond, is by placing the bone of an animal. It's questionable what's an animal, but sometimes a bird's bone in his mouth, from which a voice emanates. And we're going to discuss, as it's brought down over here, the opinion of the Rambam. Are these real, or is it just some hocus-pocus, some way to trick people, like you go to a psychic at a circus and pay them $2, and all of a sudden they know your whole life, even though they don't even know who your name is. So some believe that this has no validity, which we'll see in a moment, later on page 183, it discusses three different opinions, whether it's true or not. But nonetheless, Shaul wishes to go and find out what he should do as the Philistine army is rapidly approaching so close, as we're going to see in the next Pasuk Daled. And should he fight them? Will we be successful in fighting them? The question is, why didn't he turn to God? Maybe he did at first, we'll see. But he ends up resorting to going to Ovos and Yidonim by resurrecting the dead, so to speak, so that he will be able to hear what to do. And who can would one think he resurrected? Which voice did he want to hear the advice from? Shmuel. We're going to see that now in Rashi. That's the connection in the Pasuk that it says of Shmuel makes. Because he died, he couldn't any longer turn to the Navi and ask him for advice. Instead, he had to, by asking him for advice, the only way is by engaging in this form of witchcraft and sorcery, namely that of Ov and Yidon. So let's look at Rashi over here in Pasuk Gimel. Rashi, which also in the Masudas David says, echoes his words. Rashi says as follows, we're on page 178. Hari Kfar Nemar, it already says V'yama Shmuel that he died. Why do you need to tell us this again many prakim, many months later in chapter 28? Happened a while back. Elafi Shabalad Aladavar Bishaol Shahutzrach Lidrosh Alas Ov. The reason why it's connected. That now that Shmuel is no longer alive to answer Shaul or anyone else's questions for that matter, people then started to resort to witchcraft and to these types of crafts to find out the answers that the Nevi'im used to be able to address in the lifetime of Shmuel. And Rashi continues, Omer Pasach, the Omer of Shmuel Meis, it begins to tell us that Shmuel died. She'ilu ho'yukayim, because if he was alive, mimenu ho'yushol darish. Shaul certainly would have approached the Navi, and he would have asked them what to do with regard to this very serious matter of the Plishtim. V'shaul heiser ovos. Instead, Shaul turned over to this type of witchcraft. V'husuch levak and she'ilu shabalos ov.
He removed them. He got rid of them.
That's right. Very good. That's absolutely the case. That is true. He did remove them. That's what the pasuk says, right? But Shaul Hasir Ovos. That he removed it.
He removed them. When did he remove them? As soon as Shaul died.
As soon as Shmuel.
He had already removed them.
He had removed them before. He removed them before. Right. He removed them before, and for some reason now. We're going to see that he's going to request the very same thing that he removed again. And actually the Yalkut, picking up on those words of, we're going to see, right now it says Vishol Heser Ovos, but we're going to see in the next Psukim that he goes right after these same things that he removed.
He knows he's no longer king because Shmuel told him that.
Right.
So that's that.
But for some reason...
He couldn't ask Shmuel.
Right.
He knows
what we're going to see that the person that he does ask about the Plishtim is Shmuel. We are going to see that will happen. Maybe Shmuel doesn't have to tell me that information. I'm going to ask a question, and he'll answer only my question. So hopefully, he won't tell me this business that I'm not going to be the king for much longer. That I don't want to hear. What I do want to hear is what to do with the Plishtim. That bothers me. The Yalkut, picking up exactly what you said, compares this to a king that goes into a country and he makes a very strange decree. And that decree is every rooster in this town should be slaughtered. That's the example that the Yalkut gives. And then at night, when he's about to walk out of that city, that country, he says, oh, is there anyone around here that has a rooster that I can take? Because I want to be able to wake up as an alarm clock, it'll wake me up in the morning. So they said, what are you talking about? You just told us to kill every single one of them. Now all of a sudden you want a tarnagel? It makes no sense. So says the Yalkut, that's the same thing when it comes to Shaul. Shaul over there was Vahaseris Ovos. He was so adamant in getting rid of witchcraft, idol worship, And in fact, we're going to see that he used to punish those people that still practiced it, because we're going to end up seeing that the person that they found is going to be very reluctant in doing this act of arousing, awakening the dead, because she's going to tell him, "What do you mean? Aren't I going to get killed? Am I going to get punished?" And he's going to say, "No, don't worry about it. It's okay. Go for it." But it's strange that on one hand, this you want to get rid of it, and now all of a sudden, when it's in your best interest, now all of a sudden you want it back. Doesn't work like that. But nonetheless, that was the approach that Shaul had. Now, was this a good thing that he did? Obviously not. In fact, the one line that I underlined in the Radak says, "V'afal pi kein nechshav lo drishas ha'ov la'oven gadol." We're going to see, according to at least this opinion, believe it or not, not everyone agrees to this. Some people are going to say that Shaul did nothing wrong. We'll have to discuss why. But according to the Radak, clearly, anyone who is involved in Ov or Yidoni, that's considered to be an Avon Gadol. That's a huge sin, and that's a mistake that that he made. Well, again, we'll see whether or not everyone agrees to that. So let's move on to Pasuk Dalet and get a better understanding of what's happening. So Shmuel's no longer around. But Yikbutsu, in the meantime, Yikbutsu, a police team, the Plishtim are gathering their forces together, and they gathered together and they encamped at this place by the name of Shunem, which is very close to where the Jewish people are encamped. And it shows how little concern the Plishtim have anymore. And that's how some people connect. Shmuel Mace, Shmuel died, and now all of a sudden they have no fear. When Shmuel was alive, he protected the Jewish people. Shmuel's no longer alive, they can easily go and attack and defeat the Jewish people. Not only is Shmuel not alive, but guess who's joined us? David. So we're really in good shape. We, the Philistine army, are going to certainly attack the Jewish people. Now, did Shaul just sit there like just vulnerable to attack, like a sitting duck? Absolutely not. But Yikbos Shaul, as Kol Yisrael v'yachano begil boa, and Shaul not allowing them just to walk right onto the Jewish people into their territory, Shaul also gathered up Kol Yisrael, all his soldiers, and they encamped in a place by the name of Gilboa. Okay. Vayari Shaul es machne plishtim. Pasuk hey. That what happened when Shaul witnessed and saw, gazed upon this huge army of the Philistines, what natural feeling came over him but fear? Vayira vayecharan libo ma'od. He wasn't just afraid, he was great, terrified. Ma'od, so very, very afraid. And the Mesunas David explains logically why he was so afraid. After all, Lefish Shahayu Plishtim Am Rav. They were a huge nation. So the question is, they were always a large nation, and yet somehow we're always able to defeat them. So if you look on page 180 in English, the Abarbanel explains this also shows the great change in Shaul. We mentioned how Shaul is really losing his power as a melech, also as a soldier. That it used to be, explains the Barbanel, that when Shaul was in his younger years, his enemies were afraid of him. But now that Shaul has made mistakes, he sinned, the various sins, we're going to certainly see the sin of Amalek will be mentioned, that'll be specifically mentioned to him by Shmuel. For that reason, the tables are turned, and now all of a sudden Shaul is afraid of his enemies. So it shows the direct connection of his lack of amunah and his lack of the madrega that he is on has certainly dropped significantly, to the point that now his enemies are not afraid of him, rather he is afraid of his enemies.
Does he know about the lead?
Apparently not. But the answer to that question may be yes, based on an interesting Mesudas David, which we'll see in the next pasuk, which may lead to believe that he did know that David was there.
Why did he know? Why he so scared?
Right, because he knows David is over there. Right, that's very good. That's a very good point.
And do we have any sense how long how much time has elapsed since Amalek?
Since what?
Since the Amalek incident. I mean, has he aged a lot since then?
I would. It's certainly been a significant amount of time. I mean, we know all the different things that have happened between then and now. I don't have the amount of years, but it certainly is years.
The interesting thing is that when David is fighting the Philistine, he's fighting against Amalek.
David did fight Amalek. Which is, what do you mean?
So all that information
is
giving you the...
Right. I mean, he didn't... He certainly killed everyone from Amalek who were stationed in that area.
Obviously,
he didn't kill all the Amalek, because Haman still existed.
When he came in contact...
Right, he did his job. Shaul did not. Right, so that's a very good point, then, even though we're going to see that Shmuel will... focus on that, which is the direct. We see that David does as he was supposed to do, unlike Shaul, which makes David more of a the king. He should be the Melech as opposed to Shaul. Okay, but to answer that question, did he know where David was? Possibly not. We mentioned the last time, possibly yes, because even though he knew where he was, Shaul would not be so crazy as to actually walk into the Philistine territory just to attack David. But we're going to see another explanation of Mesudas David in the next pasuk, that he may certainly have known exactly where David was, and maybe what he was going to do also, that he was joining the Plishtim army. That we're going to see at this time, in the next pasuk. Alright, pasuk Vav. Vayishol Shaul b'Hashem. Now, Shaul wasn't the worst person, as much as sometimes people paint the picture that that's what he was. We're going to see that's not the case. In fact, we're going to see at the end of this parak, when he's told that he's going to eventually die, that he is going to be granted a great portion in Olam Haba in the world to come. But nonetheless, even though we're going to see that he causes this sin, apparent mistake of being engaged in witchcraft, of Ov and Yidoni, he doesn't start off that way. V'yishol shal b'Hashem, he turned to God first. Belo anav Hashem. For some reason, God didn't answer him. God b'chalomos, also in dreams. Now, the next four words are very important because we're going to contrast this pasuk to later on. Gam b'urim, gam b'nevim. He went to the Urim Batumim with the Kohen Gadol, where the lights would flash and he would ask a question that would answer. And also the Nevi'im. He went to whichever Nevi'im, obviously Shmuel wasn't around, but there were some Nevi'im. No answers what he should do for the Jewish people. So the Mesudas David, which I underlined, which actually, it's in brackets. But the Mesudas David asked a question. What do you mean he asked the Urim Batumim? Where were the Urim Batumim? The Urim Batumim were not by Shaul, they were by David. Why? It says the Mesudas David. The Av Shaurim Hayuim Evyasar. Evyasar, if we remember, was the lone Kohen
that remained
after the nation, after Nov, Yerachonim, was wiped out. So Evyasar, it says he grabbed the Urim Batumim and he ran away. And David said, listen, obviously, you know that they want to kill me. They obviously want to kill you. Might as well hang out together, and we'll both be wanted. So the question is, how did Shaul ask the Urim Batumim? What the pasuk says, right? That he went to the Urim, but he asked the Urim, but he was not answered. What do you mean? How did he ask the Urim Batumim? He had to physically have went there, asked the question, received an answer. And the Urim Batumim were by David. If he was by David, he would have killed him. So says the Mesudas David, Shaholachim David, because Abiyasar was with David. Efshar Lomar, we don't know this for sure, but this is a possibility because you have to understand what this pasuk means. Efshar Lomar, it's possible Shisholachulav Anoshim Lishobo, that he sent a couple messengers.
That's chutzpah, right?
Went into the Plishtim army, said, He said, excuse me, I'm a spy. Actually, I'm not a spy, but I am. Don't tell anyone. And I'm going to go right over there. I'm going to ask, will we be successful in defeating this army where you are currently located in? Exactly. And he wanted to find out. Don't worry about him. But that at least, chutzpah, yes. But on the other hand, it shows his greatness. That he didn't say, listen, how am I supposed to get those Urim and Thummim? They're way over there. They're by the enemy territory. So he did everything in his power to find out what to do. So much so that he even sent messengers into this hostile territory just so he could potentially find out what Hashem wants. Because Shaul did not want to resort to asking Shmuel in this incorrect way, which defies and is against Torah. But he had, perhaps, at this point, we're going to see, he may have felt that he had absolutely no choice but to do it. But why didn't Hashem answer? Why couldn't these things be answered? And the Urim Thummim usually answer the questions. You know, that it's not, it shouldn't be so critical. Why wasn't he answered? And Rashi explains, why didn't the Urim, it doesn't say why the other people were not, were unsuccessful in the interpretation of dreams or prophets. But look at this Rashi, the top Rashi in Pasuk Vav. Why was he unsuccessful in the Urim giving him an answer? Lafi Shaharag Nov Ir HaKohanim Lo Nena. Because he ordered that they should be killed. And therefore, Nov, which had 85 great Kohanim who were on the level of being a Kohen Gadol themselves, he had them all wiped out off the face of the earth. So, what do you expect? All of a sudden, you know, you kill me, so I'm going to do you a favor? The Urim V'Tumim were unable to respond to such a person because he showed no care, no concern for the Kohen, for the Kohen Gadol. He said, I don't care that I can wipe you all out. You can just be completely non-existent as far as I'm concerned. Now all of a sudden, just like the Tarnagol, that rooster, just the Yalkut brought, just like the Oven Yidoni that he wiped away, he said, I don't need that. Now all of a sudden is going to need the witchcraft. Same thing. I don't need you, Kohanim. I don't need you, Urim V'Thummim. Now all of a sudden I need you? Too bad. Forget it. You're not going
to
be answered.
He's fighting destiny. He knows. He was told what his destiny was. He knows.
He's been doing it for years.
He's trying to rewrite history.
I mean, but at this, but at least at this particular.
But he doesn't make sense.
But he is still the king, and he still has to defend the Jewish people.
And God, he had heard from God that he was done. He was finished.
Right.
So he's going back to God. Why would God answer him?
Well, he's still the king. I'm still the king.
To you and to me, but not to God.
But
he's seeking God, so.
He is in charge of a huge army. He is the commander-in-chief. And if he does nothing, then the Plishtim are going to wipe them out because they'll be unprepared. He's the one who's helping them out still with strategic attacks and how to protect the Jewish people. You know, is Shaul doing the right thing? Should he have handed over the reins to David? Maybe yes. But at this particular time, he sees a huge army about to attack the Jewish people and he needs to know what to do. He's genuinely
sincere. Shmuel is the one who told him you finished. Why is he going back to Shmuel?
Or maybe because he had no... He had nowhere else to turn to.
That's it.
What other choice do I have? Right. At this point, right. That's the reason why he was desperately... Right.
And he can't fight it.
Right?
It's not about the baby. It's about him.
Correct. But as we know, he suffered through... different emotional and psychological illnesses. He was unwilling to accept.
Say that he had mental.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we see that throughout. I mean, Shaul, you would think a king should keep to his word, and we saw already a couple of times, not just in En Gedi by when he ripped the garment, but also later on. When he took the pitcher and his spear, again Shaul said, I promise you, I won't harm you. You're the next king. And just immediately afterwards, he just goes after him like nothing happened. Like yesterday.
He's bipolar.
It's difficult to understand exactly.
Is that why he was able to commit suicide and he still goes to Olam Haba?
We'll have to see. It's only in a couple prakim. Shmuel Aleph is almost finished, and we'll see what happens. We'll see that shortly. But yeah, we are going to mention in this parak that certainly he will go to Olam Haba. In fact, when he marches onto the battlefield, we're going to see that shows his greatness. Some say that's why one of the reasons why he is zochah to Olam Haba. Because Shmuel, in this parak, is going to tell him that you are going to die tomorrow. You and your children will die tomorrow in war. So what would I do if I heard that? I probably wouldn't go to war that day. I'd take the day off. I'd run the other direction. But he didn't. He went to the battlefield and died with dignity.
Mesh with his former ways. You know, just not listening and just fighting destiny.
He
finally believed in what he always
did. I guess that's his true love.
We'll discuss it eventually when we get to it. But yeah, that's how some people explain. That's one of the things that he did, which showed his change. We'll see others as well. V'yomer Shaul, let's continue with Pasuk Zayin. V'yomer Shaul avodav. So Shaul, in an act of desperation, turns to his servants and says, "Bakshuli eishes balas ov. Go and try to find a woman who practices this form of craft, this witchcraft." Which is, again, to be able to revive and to the dead and to ask them questions. And I will go to her and I'll ask questions. Well, ask what to do about this war.
Was it more women than men?
Right. So if we look, we're in the middle of this pasuk, but since you asked, we'll look in the Masudas David. The Masudas David says, apparently, that there's some jobs which are dominated by men, some by women, and it says Lafi Shimitsuya Yoser Binashim the Khinemer Batara Machashefa Losekhaye, which is referring to Lashon Nekeva, that witchcraft, anyone who's engaged in witchcraft shall not live. And one person thinks of a witch.
It's a machashefa.
Right, which is right. So, but machashefa, which is this type of craft, is speaking about women. Not that a man cannot do this job, right? I'm sure it's an equal employment opportunity, whatever. They can also do this, but primarily it's something, for whatever reason, it doesn't explain why, it's something which women gravitated more to, and therefore he just said, you should probably look for a woman because the chances are that's the one, that's who will be more knowledgeable in this particular field. So that's what he said. Go and search. Now let's go back to the Pasuk Zayin. The Yomer Avad of Elov, and his servant said, guess what? I have some good news. We found someone. Hine Eishes Balas Ov Be'en Dor. We found such and such a woman, and she lives in this place by the name of Ein Dor. So all you have to do is travel over there, and then you'll be able to resurrect the dead, and you'll be able to ask whoever you want to ask questions. We'll see, it'll be Shmuel, all the questions that you want. Now, we mentioned already that according to the opinion of the Radak, it's clearly using his Lashon, an oven gadol, a terrible treachery, a terrible sin that was committed. Interestingly enough, the Shach, which is one of the premier commentators in Shulchan Aruch, known as the Sifsei Kohen, it's called the Shach. The two most famous in the Shulchan Aruch are the Shach and the Taz, which are on both sides, which people spend hours and years learning. The Shach tells us something very interesting about the halacha of Ov and Yedoni. He says, "Dilchola muter lishol b'ksamim u'machshachim." When it comes to someone who is sick, if the only way you can heal that person who is ill, you are allowed to, mutar lishol b'kshachim. You're allowed to, according to the opinion of the Shach, this is in Shulchan Aruch, you're allowed to actually be involved in this form of witchcraft, of resurrecting and listening to the dead. And the Maral says in his Chuvos, he says, that Asur, the only prohibition, is Hecha Deleika Sekanas Nefashos, is only when there's no issue of life and death. Mashma, what does that imply based on the words, I'm sorry, the Marshal? Debimakum Sekanas Nefashos Mutar Lishal, then for the time of danger, life and death, you are certainly allowed to do this. Well, if he's that, according to this, Nir L'chora, apparently it seems, the law of Shaul Isar, Bimash Shaul B'Eshes Ov. Apparently, according to this opinion, which not everyone agrees to, he did absolutely nothing wrong because it was Sekanas Nefashos. What do you mean? Who was sick? No one was sick, but there was thousands of Jewish soldiers that their life was on the line. They could have died if, you know, he doesn't find out what to do. How to do it. How to fight. So some actually interpret that there's absolutely nothing wrong with him turning to Ovni Adoni. In fact, that could explain to show further his righteousness. If it definitely works, why do you, you know, waste your time? You go to the Navi, you have to go all the way to find out the Orim and Tumim. Just go straight to Ovni Adoni. Just go straight to it. He didn't. It's because he realized that this was not the best option. But b'di'evit, if you have no other choice, in the event of saving lives, even this is permissible. So some say that he did absolutely nothing wrong, even though the general interpretation is that he did.
Right.
What?
A warlock.
Oh.
Why, if he doesn't know, if it's not wrong, and he thinks it's right,
yes,
why does he put on a costume?
Oh. That's a problem. That's right. The costume is going to be the next pasuk. That it's going to imply, as we're going to see, that apparently he did something wrong. Possibly, we'll have to think after we read the next pasuk how the shaf and the marshal can possibly explain if he did nothing wrong. Why is he hiding? We'll have to see. We'll have to think about that. Right, it could be. That could be how they'll interpret it. Right. It could be, right. Or he's making himself vulnerable by going out in the middle of nowhere. That's probably the only way I can think of an answer. But otherwise, it's certainly that's why the simple interpretation is like the Radak, that he made a mistake, and that's why he has to hide himself, and we'll see another interpretation that verifies that. Posuches. Vayischapes Shaul. Shaul disguises himself. Vayilbash begadim acherim. He wears different garments, and that's basically how Rashi interprets the words vayischapes Shaul. Shina begadav. He changes his clothes. Which the question is, it sounds like it's repeating it. If vayischapes Shaul means, that's how Rashi is interpreting it, is shina begadav. He changed his clothes. So why does the next three words say vayilbash begadim acherim, that he wore other clothes? That's what, if that Rashi just said vayischapes Shaul means he changed his clothes, which means he put on different clothes. So why does the pasuk then say vayilbash begadim acherim? So I saw the Ma'am Lois says, interestingly enough, vayischapes Shaul does not mean that he changed his clothes. That's what vayilbash begadim acherim means. Vayischapes Shaul, when it says that he removed his clothes, it could mean one of two things. Vayischapes doesn't just mean he put on another suit, he put on another royal garment. But when he stripped himself of his garments, it means he removed himself of the garments of royalty. The fact that he is about to embark in this terrible avera, this is what sealed his fate. Vayischapes Shaul, that he's completely removed and stripped of his royal garments, and that he certainly no longer has any more right to remain as a melech, because he's even falling so far to be engaged in this terrible, terrible avera. Some people interpret the word vayischapes also comes from the same root of chofesh, right? What does people enjoy in summer vacation? Chofesh, right? Free. When there's a person, you have no morals, it could also mean you just, I do it freely, like it doesn't make a difference. That he doesn't care about the mitzvos, doesn't care about these laws anymore. He's just vayischapes. Chofesh, no big deal. I'll do it. I'll break the laws. I'll break the Torah laws. It's no big deal. But again, the other way is that Vizchav Mishol is that shows that this is what really sealed his fate. That for this reason, by removing his garments, it really means that he removed any opportunity of remaining as a king because he's really fallen quite far. Pasuches continues. Vayelchu shnei anashim imo v'yavo el ha'ish alayla. And he went with two other guys to accompany him. We'll see who they are in a second. And he went to this woman at night, which is strange. We'll see, because witchcraft, for whatever reason, does not work at night, even though you envision it at night. The Chazal tell us it only applies during the day. So why did he go at night? We'll discuss that. It could be, again, he didn't want anyone to see him going there. V'yomer kasami nali ba'ov ba'alili es asher omar elayach. So after he brought these two people at night, he turned to them and said, please be engaged in this form of craft, this witchcraft, and raise up whoever I shall tell you. So if we look over here in the Radak, the Radak over here tells us a couple more things that Rashi does not. Rashi says, as we said, on the words of Yischapes, Sha'ol means that he changed his clothes. The Radak says, on the same word, similar, his shtana, he was changed, shehishet bigdei malchus, as we said, that his garments of royalty are removed. Shahilovish. Velovish begot macherim, he wore other clothes. Kedei, in order, shotaki ruho isha. So that not only other people should not recognize him, but even the woman herself should not recognize who he is. But again, you see that the clothes that he wore, obviously, because he was a king, was bigdei malchus. So he put on plain man's clothing at this time so that he should not be recognized even by this sorcerer, even by this woman who's engaged in witchcraft. Who were these two men? So it's brought down in the Radak, quoting the words of the Be'ikra Rabba, Ze'avner ve'amasa. These are the two people, great, powerful leaders on the side of Sha'ol, Avner and Amasa. Now, even though it's not brought down over here, but some actually interpret that, how were they able to find this person so quickly? He asked the question, find someone. It was outlawed. Anyone who did it was going to get severely punished. And all of a sudden, they found, oh, we found someone.
It was outlawed by him.
What?
It was outlawed by him.
By Shaul.
So he could rename
them. The question is, how do they find someone so fast? So some people explain that this woman was actually Avner's mother. So Avner, even though he was the most loyal person you can ever imagine, and Shaul made this very strict rule, no witchcraft, no Ov, no Yedoni, Avner knew his mom was an expert in it, but obviously he didn't want to publicize it. But once the king needed him, no problem. So it makes sense. Avner would be one of the two people. First of all, he wanted to visit his mom because he doesn't write home enough and doesn't call enough. But in addition to that, he knows exactly where, and by him going, it shows her that she will be safe. Right? Nothing's going to happen to you. I'm here. You're not going to be harmed. Let's see this next Radak. The Avo al Isha Lila, he went at night. Why did they go at night? It's ineffective at night. So the Radak says, Gamzeh kedei shelo takiruhu. It's the same reason why he changed his clothing, so that he should not be recognized. Lefikach babo lila. That's why he went at night. However, according Drash, it says, Yom Hoya, it was really during the day. What do you mean? If it was during the day, the Pasuk says it was Laila. It says it was at night. What do you mean it was during the day? So says the Radak, Yom Hoya, El Mitoch Sarasam Hoyadom Olehem Laila. Because he was so stressed out of his mind, the most beautiful sunshiny day in Bell Harbor, if you're miserable and you're sad and depressed, it's dark outside. It's gloomy. Because you're gloomy, right? It's just like I talked a little bit about that on Shabbos, but also the famous vort that after the Jewish people crossed the Yamsuf, it says that they drank some of this water. And it says they were unable to drink the water, kimarim heim, because it was bitter. And the Mefarshim say, what do you mean? And then all of a sudden, Moshe threw on a stick, poof, magic, it became sweet again. So the Mefarshim say, what do you mean? How did he do this? He added some sugar, some spices. Well, how did he accomplish this? They said, no, you don't understand. When the Pasuk says, kimarim heim, it doesn't mean the water was bitter. They were bitter. So the most bitter person, you can drink the sweetest of water, it'll still taste bitter to you. Because it's not the water, it's you. You're bitter. It's the same thing. That even though it's a bright, sunshiny day, they went when it was Laila. It was night. To them it was dark, because their life was dark to them. They were stressed out. And therefore, because of this, that's the time that they envisioned that they were leaving. Let's just see one more pasuk, then we'll stop. That's next week. We'll get into the good stuff. Pasuk test. The Tomar Isha Ela. So this woman, again, some interpreter was Avner's mother, said, Hine ato yadata, you know, Esa Shir Asa Shaul, don't you know? I don't know who you are. I know you came to me and you are seeking my services. You know that maybe I used to be many, many, many years ago an expert. Maybe I wasn't even an expert, to tell you the truth. I don't want to even admit to that. But don't you know that there's a great king, and you may never have met him before because I don't know you, and you're a nobody. But you know there's a great king, and his name is Shaul. Asher hichris es ha'ovos v'asen yadonim in aretz. Do you know what he did? He removed all forms of ov and yadoni from this land. There is no longer anyone in this world that does it, and therefore, belamata misnakesh benashi lahamiseni. What are you trying to do to me? You're trying to get me in trouble, so I'll break the law. And right, lahamiseni. I'm going to get killed. It was a capital offense. And if we can do it discreetly, you know. But the truth is, if you ever tell this great king by the name of Shaul, I'm in big trouble. And of course, she was speaking to Shaul at the time. Let's just do one more pasuk. Vayishava la Shaul b'Hashem lemor. So what did he do? He made a shvua. Right? How convenient. When he wants to use God's name, he does. And he swore, and Shaul did. He didn't say his name was Shaul b'Hashem lemor. She'll end up figuring it out. Next week we'll see how. Chai Hashem, I swear by the name of God, im Yikrech avon b'davar hazeh. I swear to you, as God lives, that this will not be held against you as an avon, as any form of an avon. So the Sion translates the word avon, I'm not sure why, as an onesh, as a punishment. That's what it means. So you do not have to worry. I promise you, you can do this. Nothing will happen to you. How could he make such a promise? Who are you? You're a nobody. How could you make such a promise? But he does. But it's interesting, how could he say this? If in fact it's wrong, then how could he say that there will not be a punishment? Maybe the king won't punish you, but it's also against the Torah. So some people...
God's name, to say that you're not going to be punished.
Right. How could he do such a thing? After all, if it's against the Torah. It's one thing, fine, you're not going to get punished because you're going to do it discreetly. The king will never find out. Maybe. Fine. But Hashem knows. So some people interpreting, again, based on the words of the Shach and the Marshal, that they did nothing wrong in this particular situation, is the key. The key to this pasuk is the last two words. The last two words we'll see. The last two words of this is the pasuk is what?
B'davar
hazeh. This time. Because it's in order to save people's lives, B'davar hazeh, then you will not receive punishment because it's mutar. It's permissible only B'davar hazeh now. But if you would do it regularly, then in fact you would receive punishment. We'll see that she will do so. She will revive Shmuel, which she will be so petrified because something unusual will happen, which does not normally happen when she used to revive people. We'll see. And because of that, she realizes that this person is not some nobody, but rather it's the great king, Shaul. We'll have to stop here and we'll pick